standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Chris and I are talking to Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and she joined us for actually about a one-hour session a couple of weeks back at the International UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona, near Phoenix. And we had a fascinating discussion, and we briefly talked about the book that she and Philip Imbrogno wrote called The Vengeful Djinn. And I have to caution you, this is not about the stuff that you put in a bottle and drink, although the legend does have something to do sometimes with something in a bottle, doesn't it? So I'm going to ask that silly question again, Rosemary, kind of to bring us back where we were a couple of weeks back, so listeners who didn't hear that show will know what we're talking about here. The djinn is the legend behind the genie, right?
It is, yes. The term djinn means the hidden ones, and it refers to an ancient race of supernaturally empowered beings who once lived on this planet before we came along, and they lost out to us. They were pushed off this world into another one, which in modern terms would be a parallel dimension. They exist in very ancient mythology and folklore as formidable beings who have the power to cause people a lot of problems. And our book, The Vengeful Djinn, is the case that we make for them being very active in the world today, not just in remote geographical regions or any particular spot in the country, but everywhere, and that they have an agenda for wanting to interact with us. Some of them may be hostile and aggressive in terms of wanting this world back for themselves.
When you said that, something just occurred to me, which is, how did we gain control if they're so powerful? How did we supplant them or replace them?
First of all, we have to know about them, and they're very prominent in Middle Eastern folklore and mythology and even modern-day superstitions and practice because they originated in very ancient lore in the Middle East. But they really didn't enter Western mythology except through the magical tradition, which isn't known to very many people. And also they became kind of trivialized from our translation of the Arabian folk tales, like Aladdin and the Magical Lamp. We think of them as genies in a bottle or a lamp. They've always been portrayed, well, for the most part at least, in the media as with a humorous twist, entities that have been imprisoned in these vessels and come out and have to grant you wishes. But actually, they are very formidable supernatural entities who have the capability of shape-shifting into many forms and interacting with us in a variety of ways. And we believe that they take on the disguises of other entities so that many times we really don't know what we're dealing with, and they can pursue their own agendas without us realizing it.
Maybe I wasn't clear about my question here, but what I'm saying is here, you're saying this is an ancient race of beings that was here before humanity, and then they went
That's
off
right.
to another dimension. So the question I had, and I'm trying to understand, is how were they consigned to the other dimension?
Can you answer that? You want me to answer that?
Will you go ahead, Phil, because I've had a couple there.
Oh, okay. Well, they were the stewards of this planet, this dimension, this physical existence. They developed a technology, according to the story. They developed they became very powerful. They warred among each other. They polluted the environment. They were on the verge of self-destruction. Now, according to, you know, in the beliefs, in the Muslim beliefs, and even the Persian beliefs and the stories, a higher order of being, you can call them whatever you want, extraterrestrials, angels, or whatever, came down and stopped what they were doing and isolated them so the species would not extinguish itself. And they were put sort of like in protective custody. And most of them gave up the world and willingly went, but some of them stood by and had a war against, let's say, the angels or whatever you want to call them, this higher order of being. And then finally they lost that war and they were isolated in this parallel dimension where they could do very little harm. Now, as time went on, some of them interacted with human beings. At one time in history, especially during the time of King Solomon, somewhere around 4,000 years ago or so, 5,000 years ago or so, the djinn were more prominent and interacted with the human race. There was more interaction. And as time went on, more of them became isolated from humans. And the overall goal of most of some of these djinn, as we call the ventral djinn, is that they don't like where they are, and they'd rather be back in this world. But if you think about it, I mean, this is almost like a lesson in morality. The djinn became very powerful. They polluted the planet. They warred among each other. They were on the verge of self-destruction. It almost sounds like the human race at this point of time. So that's the story on how they were taken. Human beings did not take them out, did not isolate them, even though human beings, some humans, were given control over some djinn. Some djinn were so powerful that they had to be imprisoned. And this is where you get the idea of the djinn in the ring, or the djinn in the bottle encased by iron, or in some cases, djinn encased, imprisoned in certain caves in the Middle East. If that answers your question.
Chris?
One place I think that we should start is looking at the similarities between the whole concept of the djinn and the concept of Lucifer and the fallen angels. We have some very interesting parallels, which you point out in the beginning of your book. Iblis is considered to be one of the, if not the, mastermind behind the djinn agenda. And there are some very obvious parallels, I would say, between Iblis and Lucifer, for instance. Do you want to let's look at the parallels between the Judeo-Christian sort of version and the Middle Eastern, the Islamic traditions version, and look at similarities and then look and see if we have an actual separation or if we're dealing with the same thing. This is very important, I think, for our listeners to understand that there is, number one, I think, a separation between the two categories of shape-shifting supernatural class of entities and or alleged, if you were, for our skeptics out there. And I think it, we need to kind of give our listeners a sense of the distinction between the two and the similarities.
Well, I'm going to let Rosemary answer
that. To handle
I'll,
that
say
one.
I'll say one thing about it. In Islam, there are no fallen angels. The angels were made pure of the purest light, so they're uncorruptible. They have no free will. But the djinn did have free will. And they and the devil is a djinn. So, you know, I'm going to let Rosemary take it from there.
Well, Chris, there are some very important similarities and differences, and many people confuse the djinn with demons because the ones that are interacting with us the most are hostile and aggressive, and they're often called devils. So people think they're one and the same, but the djinn are not demons. The djinn were absorbed into Islam, even though they pre-existed Islam, and the creation story that's told in the Quran explains, as Phil just mentioned, that the angels were created from pure spiritual light, the djinn from smokeless fire, which in modern terms would be plasma. The angels were created from pure spiritual light, the djinn from smokeless fire, which is plasma, and then along came humans. When God created humans, he told the angels to bow down to them, and the angels, having no free will, complied. But the leader of the djinn, Iblis, who was in heaven, refused. He said human beings were not worthy. They were less than him, and he would not bow down. For that, God cursed him and his kind and cast them out.
Okay, well, we'll get into more of this in a moment. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Philip Imbrogno, we're talking about djinns, and this is not a show about liquor. I'm going to keep emphasizing that. It's about very strange, powerful, supernatural creatures. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Jacques Vallée, Bud Hopkins, Brad Steiger, Nick Redfern, Lauren Coleman. You'll find classic and new books by these and many other authors at Anomalous Books, the number one publisher of 14 books on the planet. They specialize in books on UFOs and aliens, Bigfoot and cryptozoology, parapsychology and the paranormal, as well as alternative history, all of which makes Anomalous Books simply phenomenal. Check out their catalog at anomalousbooks.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-I-S-T books.com.
Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, April 1st, 2011. Gold opened this morning at $1,434.20. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,471.04, $735.52 for a half ounce, or $367.76 for a quarter ounce. That's $1,471.04, $735.52, and $367.76.
The Constitution and the Bill of Rights have been reduced to old relics politicians ignore, trample with their outlandish, overreaching policies. Your support of the Campaign for Liberty stands in the way of this insidious process. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I've teamed up with the Campaign for Liberty to offer the authentic proof quarter-ounce pure gold coin. For only $390 plus shipping, Midas will donate $100 to this incredible organization. Help fight big government by ordering your gold coin at 800-686-2237. You get to win twice by owning gold and fighting an overreaching government. Call 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Alex has told you that the Mideast uprisings over food prices and shortages caused by fuel costs are spreading worldwide. We're seeing the impact right here in the United States. Ethanol that was supposed to reduce petroleum use and fuel prices hit a 30-month high in February, and pump prices are expected to reach $5 a gallon. Because of shipping costs, food is being priced out of the reach of millions of Americans with an expected 35% jump in the next 60 days. Move quickly while you can still afford it, and eFoods Direct will pay your shipping costs for you. For the best-tasting, long-term storable food, you pay nothing for shipping and can put every dollar into food at today's prices. eFoods Direct, food so delicious you can serve it tonight or save it for the future. Take advantage of free shipping by calling 800-409-5633. On the web, eFoodsDirect.com/Alex, 800-409-5633, or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Did you know that drinking pure, high alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of only the most alkaline minerals. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins, and helps you regain health and energy. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen content, and raises the pH of your body to healthy levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's A-L-K-A-Vision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We return searching for the vengeful djinn with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Philip Imbrogno. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. And we've had a few glitches, I think, carryovers from that strange interview we did with Richard Souter on the previous week's episode, where we had
the
wasps.
Mosquito.
I thought it was wasps myself.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So go ahead, Chris.
Well, okay. We're back in the saddle here. I'm not sure how you pronounce the name of Azazel, but Iblis, I think, is the other term that's applied to the once powerful angel that I think we were referring to before. And one of the things that I find very interesting is the whole thing in Leviticus 16 in the Bible, in verse 9, where God tells Moses that his brother Aaron should take two goats and sacrifice them, one for the Lord for sin and the second for Azazel. And this is one of our earliest real indications of a master djinn, if you will, in terms of documentation in some sort of written down form. And this is, I think, where, as you point out in the book, where the djinn are often equated with desert areas, because these atonements or these sacrifices were sent out to the desert. Now, this also brings up the classification of djinn. We do have djinn that are a lot different than other djinn, according to the traditional knowledge. And if one or both of you could comment on this very interesting classification system that has kind of arisen through the millennia of how the djinn are actually divided into categories. This is very fascinating.
Bill, do you want to take that one?
Well, yeah, I can start on it and you can finish it. You see, human beings know very little about djinn. And the only thing that we know is what we found out by accident, some djinn talk too much or some information leaks over. At one time, we knew much more about them than we do now. But djinn have families. The family unit is small. All their relatives belong to clans. Clans are ruled by powerful djinns, and they're all ruled by djinn kings. They have their own social structure. They have their own accountability. For example, not all djinn are evil. In Islam, for example, the evil djinn are referred to as devils. You have to remember, they're like a human being. There's many likes and many dislikes. You're dealing with an individual. And what people have a tendency to do when they think about djinn, they think about the entire race and lump them all into one category and one mentality. That's not true. They're individuals. You have psychotic djinn. Hope you never run into one. You have curious childlike djinn, who are actually, you know, thousands of years old, and you have very powerful, noble djinn, which very rarely interact with the human race. But you see, in the old days, in the Persian folklore, if something was not an angel or angelic in nature and was not a human, they were considered djinn in between. They started identifying that there are different types of djinn. And where you go wherever Middle Eastern country you go to, you'll hear different names. And that can be very, very confusing because there's probably 20, 30, 40, 50 different names for djinn. And it depends upon the country you're in. But if you go back to the root of the Persian belief, they divide them into certain types of ranks for colors. You'll see the early representations of these djinn, blue djinn further away, with blue skin. But it really has nothing to do with the color of their skin. It had something to do with our identification of their rank, which is very powerful. And green djinn, which are very, very young, and yellow djinn, which are in between. So the blue djinn are the elders, the very powerful ones that were around at the fall of the djinn, that were around. That, remember, the green djinn are less powerful. Most of them are young. You see, in the djinn ranks, the older they are, you assume that the more knowledge they get. They're not born with power that they can do anything. Like human beings, they have to learn how to manipulate this power. For example, as we go to school and we learn more things, we become more knowledgeable and more powerful ourselves. But there are people who go through their entire life and they'll go past a high school education or a sixth grade education in some cases, and they never reach a certain level and they never seek additional knowledge. The djinn have to do the same thing. They have probably training sessions, schools and so on, where they teach people how to use their abilities and they teach their people how to manipulate matter and energy. And not all djinn have the same power. Some are definitely more capable than others. So you look at djinn, you know, you have to look at them as individuals and not as the sum of the whole, as one mentality, because they're not.
I have a question here, Philip. Do they look like humans? Are they human-like or what? I mean, we think of the pictures we see, of course, in the movies of genies. Sometimes they're human, sometimes they're, as they say, a little bit monstrous. What's the truth?
Blue-colored Robin Williams.
Robin Williams, yeah, yes. I mean, oh, well, that's the ultimate djinn.
Yes, but you know, you have to remember that jinn, according to the Quran, are actually made of smokeless fire, which to me, you know, sounds like plasma, which means they have really no form. Their form seems to be contained by magnetic fields, and they can manipulate the shape of the magnetic field to manipulate their shape. They have the ability, for example, to take certain forms of matter, certain forms of plasma, certain forms of matter, and change it into other forms. And to us, we understand this process today, although we can't do it, but back then, the ability of a jinn to do this was magic. They could take on different forms, but they can't hold forms. The more powerful and the more trained the jinn is, the longer he can keep a form, or she can keep a certain type of form. They can take the form of animals. Most of them will take the form of humans, reptilian-like creatures, monster-like creatures. When they take human form, most of them are very beautiful-looking, if they want to be. But according to what I understand when I was in the Middle East, is that they have a problem with one form, and that's maintaining the shape of the human eye. Jinn eyes are yellow, and they're almost snake-like. They have one problem. They can't hold the shape of the eyes, and the eyes revert back to the jinn. So this is how they say how you can identify a human who is a jinn. Sooner or later, if you're around them long enough, the eyes are going to flicker back and forth into a jinn eyes.
Or maybe they'll always wear sunglasses.
Well, that's what I'm saying now. I mean, there are people walking around in the Middle East, you know, wearing sunglasses all the time. Like the Terminator, for example, he had the red eyes. So he wore the sunglasses. So this is the same sort of thing where, you know, the jinn, they say, are in this world in human form, and they wear sunglasses so that people can't identify them, even if people did. I mean, if you walk down in New York City and you're walking down and a very strange individual and your eyes flash to yellow, with people walk by you, they wouldn't even care.
Well, in New York, there's so many weird people that it doesn't matter if somebody's an E.T., it's a jinn or anything else. It wouldn't make a difference.
Well, a jinn can, you know, interface with this world, and especially in the United States, and go unnoticed. But in the Middle East, it's a different story.
I want to ask you more about this in a moment. We have Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Philip Imbrogno. We're talking about the vengeful jinn and why they're vengeful. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack. Of the Rockaway, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $220. And the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
It's the winter cold and flu supplement sale at HerbalHealer.com. Take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on the best cold and flu supplements available. Many of you know elderberry is exceptional against viral infections. Right now, Herbal Healer Academy has elderberry power, regularly priced at $16.95, now incredibly low, at only $10 for 60 vegetarian caps. For children and seniors, our Herbal Healer Academy Flu Away Elderberry Liquid is only $13 for a 4-ounce bottle. Also on super sale, olive leaf capsules, oregano oil plus capsules, and our incredible respirate formula, Oregacillin Physician Strength Capsules for your lungs. Normally $34.95, now just $25. Hit the winter specials link at HerbalHealer.com for these cold and flu supplement specials and other on-sale products like apple cider vinegar, brain power, and neuro recovery. New customers get a free catalog with your first order. Log on and hit the winter specials now at HerbalHealer.com.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist lecturer Stanton Friedman. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We're returning with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Philip Imbrogno. We're talking about vengeful djinns. What are they here for? Are they real? Later on, Chris O'Brien, our co-host, will ask the questions you listeners asked in the Paracast forums at forum.paracast.com. But I'll ask the obvious skeptic's question, okay? We think of genies, djinn, whatever, as the stuff of legends, fanciful stories, Aladdin's magic lamp, Barbara Eden as I Dream of Genie. So, for people who don't believe in this kind of stuff, how do you prove it to them? Rosemary, you want to start with that?
I never try to prove the paranormal or anything supernatural to anyone, because the skeptics will hold out and not believe until they have an experience that convinces them otherwise. To people who sit on the fence, I say, well, you can't really cherry-pick the paranormal. You can't allow yourself to believe in something like fairies or angels or even demons or ghosts and feel that some other part of the paranormal couldn't possibly exist. If we're going to study these entity encounters, which clearly human beings have been having throughout our history, then we have to be open to all possibilities. Our entity encounters are told through our mythologies and our folklore. I think one thing that Western people may have difficulty with concerning the djinn is that the folklore never really became part of our Western folklore. It's Middle Eastern folklore that still seems very remote and surreal to a lot of people in the West. But it's just as real as folklore about the fairies, our ghost stories, and our current mythology concerning extraterrestrial encounters.
I'll ask that obvious question. Does the djinn have anything to do with what we perceive as UFOs? Any relationship?
Well, absolutely. One of the things that we do in the vengeful djinn
is... We just lost Chris again. Hang on.
Chris, did you make your wishes? to the gym.
Okay, wish number one, I wish for a good connection.
Oh, yeah, you may not get it. Don't say that.
You know, this is interesting here. Normally, we only have occasional problems with the technology. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of technology, satellite, whatever, there are going to be problems. Now, Chris is maybe, what, 120 or 130 miles away from me, and we normally have a pretty good connection, but today
always.
We've had troubles maintaining a good connection. So, But the point is here, we think of Jin, Rosemary, and Philip, I guess, as mischievous. Now, are they just playing pranks on us, or maybe in Chris's parlance, are they tricksters, or they have a higher purpose in mind?
There is a significant trickster element to the Jin, and from their very ancient folklore, they are renowned for being deceitful, tricky, stealthy, and looking for ways basically to interfere with human beings and undercut them. And of course, if they are wronged, they can be quite vengeful. And this is an element that exists in a lot of our paranormal experiences across the board.
Well, let's get back to the historical elements before we move on and kind of equate the Jinn into a more modern context. One of the things that I've always been fascinated by are the legends surrounding King Solomon, of course, the son of David, who, it is said, was able to corral the Jinn and was able to control them to the extent where they actually helped build the first real temple of Jerusalem. Can we talk about that a little bit and how Solomon, I think, as a historical character, appears to be a crucial kind of conjunction in belief systems between the idealized Western pop culture version and the more traditional Islamic version?
King Solomon is one of the main ways that the Jinn entered Western folklore through the magical tradition. He's a legendary figure and somewhat historical. There isn't too much really known about him. He was said to live about 1000 BC. He was the second king of Israel. He was the son of David. When he assumed the kingship, God asked him what he would like, what sort of gift he would like, and he asked for discernment. So God granted him great wisdom and power because he was seeking discernment rather than something to glorify himself. One of the things that he was able to do was command the jinn, and this was through a magical ring that also was a gift of God that enabled him to summon them, cause them to reveal their names, which is in magic a form of command and control. And then he enslaved them to build the Temple of Jerusalem, and in some accounts, the entire city of Jerusalem, for which they complained and felt they suffered mightily, and they were enslaved until his death. The magic that he is said to have used to control the jinn became incorporated in a book called The Greater Key of Solomon, which does have some ancient roots going back to about the first century CE and has been handed down throughout the centuries in various magical texts called grimoires. These are texts for conjuring and summoning spirits. It's often translated as spirits or angels or demons in our Western translations, never as jinn, which was the original. And these are handbooks that have astrological information in them, all of the incantations, magical seals, symbols, and instructions for controlling these spirits who were originally the jinn.
Well, we have an interesting parallel down in the Maya traditions of the Alukes, who supposedly were able to build the Temple of the Magician at Uxmal overnight. And do you see any with your work? I mean, obviously the two of you are pretty amazing in terms of the amount of research you've done into these legendary type forms that seem to be manifesting, you know, today in the modern world to a greater or lesser extent, depending on how skeptical you are. But do you see parallels with other traditional systems of knowledge, for instance, the Maya, and this tradition of dwarf-like, almost jinn-like entities being able to build a whole temple in a single night?
Well, we see a lot lot of similarities between the descriptions of the djinn and descriptions of other kinds of entities. We've compared them to fairies, demons, shadow people, mysterious creatures, extraterrestrials. And we're not saying that these other entities don't exist in their own right, but the djinn could infiltrate among these entities as a way of trying to get back into this world, yet remaining hidden. So there are some definite parallels, and the question then is, how do we know what's what? How do we discern among the various entities that we're interacting with? And these are some of the questions that we wanted to raise with the book to get people thinking about the true nature of our supernatural encounters and the purposes behind them. For example, considering the ETs, we've got the ETs who seem to be abducting us and having a hybridization program going on. Well, could the djinn be involved in that? In lore, they are capable of intermingling with and mating with human beings to produce offspring. So they could have their own program going on, but as a masquerade. We're thinking it's all ETs, and it may not be, for example.
Well, you're both, I mean, admirable, seasoned field investigators, and I must underscore that. You're not just sitting in your armchairs researching arcane fact, if you can call them facts in the historical tradition. As field investigators going out into the field now, armed with this whole new set of research that you've really obviously, you've dove into the pool of the djinn, and I'm wondering, how do you differentiate? Like, let's say you go out to a haunted site and you have inexplicable phenomena occurring and potential entities in terms of, your average interpretation. How would you differentiate between a standard, ghost that's some sort of residual type spirit or entity and something that's conscious and self-determined like a djinn?
Before we have the answer to that question, we have Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Philip M. Brocknow, I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Are you still a traditional smoker? Now experience a new lifestyle and try vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. Imagine no ashes, stains, nasty smell, or coughing and hacking. With LeCig e-cigarettes, revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replaceable cartridge, you'll get all the benefits and satisfaction of smoking without the hazards. Choose your taste from a wide variety of our new American-made Vaporeon e-liquids at LeCig.com. And LeCig smokes the competition by serving thousands of worldwide customers with real people customer service, fast, free, same-day shipping, and a 30-day warranty and satisfaction guarantee. So are you ready for a new vaping lifestyle? Then call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Or visit LeCig.com, spelled LeCig.com. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker.
There's mounting evidence suggesting that there are people, governments, corporations, and whole professions intent on short-circuiting humanity's well-being. GMO, food legislation protecting big agriculture, the attempted elimination of vitamins and alternative medicines, it seems their hand has been tipped. They want to dictate your health, wealth, and your longevity. Whatever the outcome, we have a solution. Wild edible food. Why worry about food when all has been provided? We imagine that we were ejected from the garden and never invited back, but the garden's still here. There is an endless wild abundance which grows all over our green earth, just waiting for you to wake up and see it. Let author Linda Runyon teach you how to see, know, get, prepare, store, and eat wild edible food. Save money, add nutrition, and ignore the noise when you go shopping in nature's supermarket. Go to ofthefield.com and get started today. Or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE. That's ofthefield.com or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE and begin to see a different world.
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
We seek the djinn, or maybe we shouldn't seek the djinn, I don't know. Of course, the book is The Vengeful Djinn, from Philip Imbrogno and Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And before our break, Chris O'Brien was asking a very long, detailed question, and I'll leave it up to Philip and Rosemary to decide who takes the question. Go for it.
Well, if you go in the Middle East, they'll tell you that there are no UFOs, there are no ghosts, there are no demons, there are no fallen angels, there are only djinn. So how do you differentiate between other types of paranormal phenomena in the djinn? Well, djinn are very crafty and they're very old. And if they want to hide themselves, there's no way that you're going to be able to identify them. But like humans, they have egos. They have a tendency to, after a while, expose themselves for who they really are. Most will engage in conversation after a while, and if they think they have the upper hand over the poor human, fool the human is their favorite game, they will continue. So this is one way that you can identify any type of djinn activity. Now, you have to remember, they don't have one mentality. If you're dealing with a psychotic djinn, he's going to act psychotic. It's going to act psychotic. If you're dealing with a young djinn, it's going to act very childish. Many of the young djinn, according to legend, like to appear in front of children and take on forms like what they expect, like storybook characters and so on and so on. And they always say, you know, we should take into consideration and take more serious childhood, you know, imaginary friends, so-called imaginary friends. So if you look at the entire paranormal, it's very confusing. I mean, you have the ghost hunters out there, you have the UFO people out there, you have the Bigfoot hunters out there. And, you know, most of them don't agree with the other as to what are the origin of these phenomena. But once you factor in the djinn, it puts in that element that sort of makes it a little easier to understand. And I want to make it very clear that, you know, djinn are not magical beings. They are dimensional entities that use what we would consider the new ideas of physics to manipulate matter. What they do and what they're capable of, we're beginning to understand with the new areas of theoretical physics. So it's not too far from, let's say, the beliefs of anyone that there, yes, there are these other dimensional existences out there, and there's no reason to assume that some of them are not inhabited by intelligent beings. Now, what the djinn call themselves, we don't know. That's the name we've given to the djinn. It means the hidden ones, because in the Middle East and in the Persian beliefs, they thought they were invisible because they could not be seen only if they wanted to be seen. But today, invisibility may mean that they exist in a parallel dimension, an area of space that we can't turn to see.
Well, let's kind of fast forward into the present day and talk about your trip, actually, to the Middle East, Phil, where you had quite an amazing field trip out to a particular a particular location. Yeah. Why don't you give us a sense of what it's like to go as a field investigator to, you know, a foreign land, to a place that has an ancient tradition of being a kind of a grand central station for these this classification of entity. Why don't you give us a kind of a sense of what it's like to go chasing after them?
Well, that was not my original idea. I was over in Israel, and I kept on hearing about the jinn, this. And I'm saying, what the heck is a jinn? And I was thinking about people, you know, oh, yes, the jinn. Because, you know, I was interested in UFOs back then, and I was doing a lot of field research in the UFOs back then. And, so I just started asking around and making friends with people and so on, and a lot of people are very friendly there. And they kept on saying jinn. And I'm saying, my first thought was, you know, like, you know, a drink. People want gin. What are they talking about? Then I began to realize they were talking about genies. And, of course, being a dumb Westerner, I started laughing. They took this, like, how could you be laughing at the gin? They're very, very serious. You know, I was thinking about, you know, Barbara Eden and, you know, Robin Williams and Aladdin's Lamp and all that and all this, you know, Arabian Nights stuff. And I began to realize that, you know, the people over there took it very serious. So to make a very long story short, I was able to get into Saudi Arabia with no problem. Well, with some problems from Israel. It's a long comical story almost. And I began to pick up more information on the jinn. I actually had dinner with a member and other people, of course, a member of the royal Saudi family. And as I'm sitting at the dinner table with a friend of mine who I served with in the military, who was a high-ranking officer in the Saudi royal family security force, I was sitting next to the cousin of the prince and so on. The prince was supposed to be there, but he didn't show up, so the cousin showed up for the dinner as an ambassador. And he looked over to me and he says, "You're an American. What do you do in my country?" And I said, I'm tracking down and researching gin. I've got interested in it." And he yells at the top of his lung, "Gin?" He says, "They are in my country." He says, "Your government is trying to capture one."
Oh.
He told me this amazing story about how there are governments of the world, the Saudi government, the United States, and European governments, and so on. They have a special unit, and they're out in the desert in these special operations, and they're trying to capture a jinn. And because they know that jinn travel through the dimensional barriers, and they figure they're using some type of technology, they want to capture one to obtain this technology. Now, this is not the first time that I've heard this story. And I was really amazed. And then, of course, he wouldn't talk to me anymore, but he referred me to a holy man who was downtown in the other part of the poor part of the Saudi of Riyadh. And you have to remember, there are two classes of people, the very rich and the very poor. And this particular individual, I had a translator, and he told me the entire history of the jinn. So from there, I ended up in Oman and ended up at a place called Majas al-Jinn, which means the Cave of the Jinn. Now, the interesting thing enough, originally that cave was called the meeting place or the place of the goat. And once again, that ties in Azazel, the goat god, with the jinn and so on and so on. But in that cave, it's supposed to be where the jinn enter our particular reality. And it's an amazing place. I mean, it's just not like a little cave. The only way that you can get into it is from the top, openings in the top. And it's so large in there that you could fit the pyramid, the big pyramid at Giza, inside the cavern and still have room. And this is how big it is. So from the top of the opening to the bottom is like 350 feet. And I had a guide and also my interpreter. And I went down, halfway down, and they were up And they would not come in. They said to me, "Well, here is where you must go alone, my friend." And I looked at them like, "Give me a break. I thought you were coming with me." Anyway, about halfway down, I hear them yelling, and of course I can't understand what they're saying. They're speaking Arabic, but I heard the word jinn. And during that time, I could swear in the cave, I mean, the echoing and everything, I could swear I could hear a voice. And I couldn't understand what it was saying, but there was a green mist that was coming up from the bottom of the cave and rising up. And I look up, and my interpreter and my guide is gone.
Now you're hanging on belay.
I'm hanging. I'm rappelling down. I'm about 150 feet down. And they're up there screaming, and I see this mist coming up, and I think I hear this voice that's speaking this language. But I'm not exactly sure because it was echoing in the cave, and they were rambling on an Arabic up there, and I didn't understand them, but I heard the word jinn. So I look up, and they're gone. And I'm saying to myself, I got to get back up there. So I'm climbing back up, and I come to the top of the opening, and they're running down the hill. And I'm saying, "Where are you going?" And my interpreter yells back. He said, "The jinn." He says, "We have to get out of here." And, of course, they're ready to jump in the Jeep and take off. And I would be left somewhere in the Hadjar Mountains all by myself, an American.
So they wouldn't care. They wouldn't care. They'd abandon you.
They were going to take off in the Jeep. And I would leave me there. They were so terrified. So I ran down and caught up with them. And got in the Jeep as they were taking off, and they were saying all these Arabic prayers on the way back. And my guide who came with me from Saudi Arabia, he was a captain in the Saudi Army, he was saying to me, "I never believed. I heard legends. I heard stories. I didn't believe, but they are real. The jinn are real." So we went back to the town of Finn, where the people were very upset. Our guide started telling them what happened. And the people got very upset with me because they said that I woke up a sleeping jinn.
I'll tell you what, you woke up the jinn, but we have to wake up our sponsors right now. Otherwise, they're going to be very upset. We have Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Philip Imbrogno. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Pentecost.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.